way. Your job's a joke, you're broke, your love life's DOA. It's like you're always stuck in second gear.
A lot of people don't know that here on the Sunday Morning Show, we also live in adjacent apartments just like Friends. Andy Mazur, who's not here today, Joe Brand is filling in, but Andy Mazur and Dave Schwann live in one apartment together. They have reclining chairs. And,
it's more like Seinfeld, where...
You're like Kramer?
Kramer lives across the hall, yeah.
You are very Kramer, Schwanny, now that you mentioned that.
Huh? What?
Do you also wash vegetables in the shower like Kramer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure I do.
I'm like Ross. I don't live anywhere near any of you. And prefer my privacy.
And prefer that, yes.
Right. Joe Brand, who's filling in today, you're going to have to be like a recurring character on the show, like a Gunther or something like that.
Gunther was here not too long ago. Oh, that wasn't on your show. Somebody else's show. We met Gunther not too long ago.
That would be cool to meet him, I think.
Yeah, it was you know, an abstract character from Friends to meet, but then you say who he is and everyone knows who he is.
Absolutely. You know, I mentioned I had as a news story on television the other day who's going to be on. The reason why I'm playing this is because the Friends reunion is this week. And I'm a little more excited than really a grown man should be about a reunion television show that's going to be on. It's going to be on Thursday on HBO Max. But I was mentioning who's going to be on the show outside of the six, stars of the show. Tom Selleck is going to be on, do a guest appearance because he was a semi-regular. And I don't remember the names of the actors and actors. I don't remember Gunther's real name.
Yeah.
The actual actor and the character who played Janice.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
She's going to be on the reunion special. But if you say the real names, I don't even remember them right now. But you know them because they are these iconic characters from this television show.
You know, can I be Paul Rudd?
Oh, that would be very cool. He was a great character.
He was. Like, immediately when he came into the show, everyone liked him, and you liked his role with TV.
Such a good actor, anyway, but he was so self-effacing. What was the name of his character?
Mike?
Mike? Was it Mike? That sounds right. Who was the character that Hank Azaria played? Because I also liked him. He was the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Phoebe's boyfriend who went to Russia or...
The scientist.
Siberia.
Yeah.
Someplace. That was such a weird... quirky character. It's such a good show. It is such a good show. I think that's why I'm personally excited to see this reunion. I think a lot of people are signing up for HBO Max just so they can see the reunion.
David. Hank Azaria was David.
It was David. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds right. Schwanny, are you excited about this?
I am now that you told me about it.
Did you watch the show?
I
you pretty
did.
Much stop watching primetime TV when the Honeymooners went off. In original
Dick Van
run.
Dyke. Actually, Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke.
But I
Oh, you're so Mel Cooley. That's also a very good show.
Now we have to come up with some Buddy Sorrell lines here.
Oh, Buddy Sorrell is the greatest.
I did watch Friends, but I didn't get into it until later, like the last season, and kind of played catch-up with
Friends?
It. Yeah.
Really?
And played catch up with it and, you know, just kind of got into it off and on.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
Still a good show.
Oh, yeah.
Really very well written, very well performed, really funny, really iconic, episodes, you know, things like that that people look forward to. So
one of my favorite icebreakers.
Redefined the word Friends, too, with the way that show ran, the evolution of the show.
One of my favorite icebreakers is just saying, oh, so who is your favorite Friends character?
Mm.
And then I feel like you can tell a lot about person if they say who.
Yeah, you can really, that says a lot about a person. Schwanny, who's your favorite Friends character?
I think it would be Rachel.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So creepy.
Well, you were the one that said you were more excited than a grown man should be about this.
So, yeah, but it's not like his favorite character is Rachel.
Yeah, I mean. Well, and you said it like, Rachel. Rachel. I'm going to do a background check on you after that.
I didn't say it that way.
I think my favorite character, I think Phoebe is my favorite character.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
Yeah, I like Phoebe. I like Phoebe or Joey.
I'm a Chandler guy.
Chandler Bing.
I feel like almost every one of Chandler's lines is good.
Very true. Very true. Could you say a more true statement? I mean, that's become part of the lexicon.
Right.
To, you know, state things in a Chandler sort of way, which kind of leaves, Ross just kind of hanging out there a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not too big of a fan of the Gellers.
Or David Schwimmer, yeah. But they're both a little nuts. Both Ross and Monica, both a little high maintenance, right?
Yeah. You know, I think they actually named the character Dave Schwimmer after Dave Schwann.
Oh.
I saw a lot of
He won't want to admit that.
Wow. Next time he's in town.
One Dave Schwann is enough.
Next time the Schwimmer's in town, we'll have to ask him. Because he did go to school here. It's very possible that he listened to you on the radio and said, what's the weirdest character I could possibly
that guy base this that's television? On the radio.
That guy I heard on the radio that seems to be stuck in 1962.
64. It's when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan. 64.
Very true.
64.
It's all very true. So that's Thursday. They're debuting it on HBO Max on Thursday, because that's when Friends was always on, Thursday nights. So if you're interested in that, check your
local listings.
Well, I don't even think it would be in local listings because it's on HBO Max. It's streaming.
So is it live still though, or
the special?
Yeah.
No, filmed it.
Oh, okay.
Like
it's
like a month ago.
It's one episode. Got it.
Yeah. It's just one. It's not episodic. It's not like an episode of Friends. It's a reunion of the six characters on the same soundstage where they filmed the show. But it's, them talking about the show, favorite moments, guest stars, things like that. I haven't seen it yet. They're supposed to send me an advance copy so I can review it, but I have not received that yet. So I'm only hearing what's been, published, in the press releases that they've sent out so far. But Thursday is the day that is going to happen, so... So the Indy, what, the time trials you said are today?
The qualifying rounds.
Qualifying rounds. No, so what does that mean exactly?
This is the round where they figure out who qualifies for the actual Indianapolis 500. It's kind of cool that we've been, playing that and horse racing along with, the NFL that we've had in the past here on the radio. But I think it's, kind of a dive back to when people used to have to listen to sports on the radio. And
right.
You kind of get that medium that you're not normally used to. And, it's kind of a unique thing we do here.
So what will each individual driver go solo on the track and they have to hit a certain speed or, do something, a backflip or...
Yeah, we'll go with that.
A three-quarter. It's like the Olympics.
I don't know. Essentially, it's the cars competing. It's more the drivers.
What do they do, though? I mean, if I were to go there with my SUV this afternoon, because I'm going to get off early today, I could get down to Indianapolis in time.
No, you can't. They're an hour ahead of us.
Oh, that's right. Darn it.
If you could just keep talking while I type a little bit more and
look this up.
Live the Indy 500 on Lakeshore every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Just turn the sound on.
Talk about time trials there.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what you have to do to qualify.
You know what? That's a great tease for the 10 o'clock sports, I feel like.
All right. I like to ask questions to which we don't have the answers.
I know it's so close.
He's been doing it to me for years, Joe, so just, deal with it.
Yeah. I know it's so close and competitive that it comes down to just like turns and how sharp you're making turns.
Do you have to complete a course? What do you call it when you go fully around the track? Do you have to do that in a certain amount of time?
It's a lap. You may have to do it.
a lap
around the track.
Yeah, that's true.
Based on my
hate when you say stuff that's so simple and correct that I couldn't think of.
Well, based on my extensive
knowledge.
What
your name was again?
Wait a minute, Joe's. I think Joe found whatever he was looking for.
No, this is based on my extensive knowledge of this.
And true morning show tradition is going to try to pass it off as an ad lib.
You know, of course they consider it the fastest 2 days in IndyCar series racing.
Do. Of course they
The Crown
do.
Royal Armed Forces qualifying weekend. So over these last 2 days, 35 drivers and teams will fight for one of the 33 positions in the starting field.
Doesn't sound like he's reading at all.
For the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500 presented by Gainbridge.
Right.
He's
getting all the sponsor mentions in too.
Of course, Dean, that drivers are going to take 16 quarters at the speeds of 230 miles per hour, hoping to put together four perfect laps to secure a spot and fight for a chance to etch their name in history.
So they got to do four perfect laps.
As the next Indianapolis 500 champion. So, it's common knowledge.
It's just time trials for positioning, right? Where they start.
I think I explained it all right there, Ryan. I don't know if I could do it anymore.
You're right. That was crystal clear. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But also 35.
I'm not sure that I know the answer to my question. Exactly. I know I got that you got to do four perfect laps.
Yeah.
But what does that mean?
I could
drive around in four perfect laps.
At 230
miles. 40
miles
an hour. I could do it.
35 cars will attempt to qualify for a starting position, either from one or two lanes. See quick facts below. With positions 10 to 30 locked Saturday. The Fast 9 shootout. Last chance qualifying will be determined Sunday, May 23rd. Hmm. So, yeah, it's just,
I guess we'll find out at noon today.
Yeah, of course.
When we broadcast that live here on WGN. Have you ever driven on a real racetrack?
No, but that seems like a cool gift to give. Well, not maybe to me, but, one time we gave my uncle the opportunity to ride in a race car.
It's cool. It is cool. I've done it. Chwani, I think you've said you've done it,
I've been to the race.
Oh, to the race.
I've visited the race there. My friend got to do that, though.
I did.
He is really into it.
At Disney World, I think they have... it's not in the park, but nearby in Orlando, they have, it's a Richard Petty race track where you get into the car and, they take you like 170 miles an hour around this track.
But you're the only one on the...
It's exhilarating.
On the track, right?
Yes. Yes, you are the only one on it. And we were filming something for television, so I don't think they normally let people drive themselves, but they did let me drive. And I got up to about 140 miles an hour, and I thought I was really cool. And then I saw my life flash before my eyes and thought I should slow down.
They let you do this?
Yeah.
They let you do this?
Yeah. It was fun.
Was anyone else in the vehicle with you?
No.
And that's good.
And oddly, everybody else left the track also.
That doesn't surprise me.
I understand that.
Were you texting while you were driving?
I was. I was texting and eating a hamburger.
Was it a requirement like when they launch a rocket at NASA that you had to be 3 miles away from the actual site when you started driving?
It's fun. It's fun. And I went to Indianapolis 4 or 5 years ago, something. We're doing a story for TV. And just to be there when it's happening is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Highly recommend it.
Did you wear a helmet?
I did.
Does that even matter at that speed?
I had to. Probably not.
Can you see a picture of that with the helmet and him going 140 miles an hour?
I think there are pictures of me in this car.
You need a pair of goggles.
I got the helmet, and they strap you into this thing like so tightly you can't even move. You have to crawl in the window. You know how the drivers do? You crawl in and out of the windows. You have to do that. And they have you so strapped up inside of this thing that, probably if something happened, you'd be okay in it.
Probably.
But turned out okay.
Did you smile when you reached 100 miles per hour?
Oh, I was ear to ear grinning. When I got up to 140, I was like, I cannot believe I'm driving this fast. And then you're driving that fast and it doesn't even seem like you are. And then you look down at the speedometer and it's like... Maybe I better slow down a little bit.
And how long did it take you to slow down to stop when you're going that fast?
I don't remember. It took a while.
Yeah.
It took a while. Fun. Highly recommend.
Didn't have a parachute come out in the back like
not
the
that I'm aware
Batmobile.
Of. No, not that. Okay. Not that I'm aware of. Okay, so anyway, we've got the what do they call the qualification?
The qualifying, yes, qualifying of the things. Indianapolis 500.
All right, so that's today at 12 o'clock here on WGN. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this right now, because this is easily as exciting as the Indy 500. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again for your far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts presented to you so proficiently, so beautifully, so eloquently each week by Dave Schwann. I was trying to think of some racing name.
Mario Andretti.
Andretti. See, that's what I should have said. Dave Andretti Schwann.
He was the hero when I was in fifth grade or sixth grade.
I couldn't think of a race name. But anyway.
That'll work.
Here's the mope.
And thank you very much, Dean. Today we go way out west to almost the middle of California, or California, as Granny used to say on the Beverly Hillbillies, to Modesto, California.
What? That Granny used to say?
Granny, yeah.
California. We're going to California, Jed.
So, but that's where we're going today. Modesto, California.
So weird.
Population 101,000. Modesto, California is home to the Gallo family winery.
Oh, now you're talking.
The largest family-owned winery in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Goes back actually to about 1870. But Modesto, California is the birthplace of a certain movie director who had a very successful movie open up on this coming Tuesday's date, May 25th, 1977. Mm. Who is the director? Mm. And who is the film, you ask? Mm. Well, this music will solve both of those questions.
Steven Spielberg?
No.
Francis Ford Coppola?
You know better.
Martin Scorsese?
Keep going. It's not Alfred Hitchcock either.
George Lucas was born in Modesto, California.
George Lucas born in Modesto, California in 1944, and on this coming Tuesday's date, 1977, Star Wars opened up in theaters.
Crazy.
Earning $461 million in U.S. ticket sales, close to $800 million worldwide.
That's crazy.
And won 7 Oscars. How about that?
Yeah.
The opening of Star Wars, the anniversary is this coming Tuesday, and George Lucas born in Modesto, California, where it is sunny and 53 today. They're going to have a high of 78. We're going to actually be warmer than Modesto, California today.
It'd be nice to sitting in a nice vineyard wine country right now.
Let's go. Let's do the show from there.
Let's do the show.
Let's do the show from there.
Yeah, the show and alcohol. That's a good combo. That's a darn good combination.
It's enough trouble with just coffee.
Exactly.
Well, let's get a race car.
Dean Richards Sunday morning. Time for him. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, my friend. How are you this beautiful Sunday morning?
Dean, I am doing great. Yeah, even a little overcast. The temperature's phenomenal, though, so hopefully everyone's getting outside today.
Yeah, this is a great day to be outside. And, you know, groups of people all getting outside, getting together. I noticed restaurants, people are busier than ever. People are, you know, gathered in social places. How comfortable are you with all of that as someone who's been keeping an eye on what's going on with COVID?
Yeah, I'm fairly comfortable. I wish we were, you know, one of the 8 states that had a, you know, vaccination rate over 70%, but we're creeping up. But for overall, I think those people who are fully vaccinated can be much more comfortable than they could have been, you know, a month or two ago, for sure.
Yeah. Where are we in the state of Illinois and in the Chicago area right now with their vaccination rate?
The 60 60-62%, you know, so we're creeping up there. But, you know, we've seen the hesitancy really start to ramp up right now, and the demand has just dropped off dramatically. So it now is getting back from the mass vaccination sites, getting the vaccine into the hands of the doctors in their offices so they can answer those questions for those who are hesitant and make it more on a personal level than, you know, just showing up at a site with not being able to have your questions answered.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it, that we went, you know, from that point where people were traveling 2 and 3 hours to, you know, places far away from their homes to get their vaccination so they could get vaccinated early, to a point now where they're sitting around at some of these vaccination sites waiting for people to come in.
Yeah. And, you know, we knew that we had that hesitancy rate of about 25-30%. But we still have a portion of the population, Dean, that's hesitant right now because they can't afford to miss a day of work due to potential side effects, or the timing's just not lining up. So we're really pushing employers now to be as flexible as possible with their workers to make sure that we're getting everybody vaccinated who wants a vaccine right now.
Right. Yeah. It's and people who just flat out don't want to get it, you know, for for, you know, political reasons, for, you know, I heard over the weekend, probably from two or three different people, the reason they're not getting the vaccine was, I don't even want to repeat what the reasons were, but they were some crazy things that have absolutely nothing to do with truth or science or anything, that they heard somebody told somebody, and, you know, how the truth can sometimes get jumbled around when it's passed around to two or three people. But they were that was the reason that they weren't going to get their vaccine, that they had heard some crazy thing that was had nothing, not based in truth whatsoever.
So frustrating. You know, you would hope that they would follow the science. And really, I think one of the big things everyone has to look at is look at the number and the percentage of people who are having symptoms after having COVID. You know, these individuals who are having brain fog, are lethargic, have no energy, can't taste or smell. I mean, the pain of the shot and the side effect for a day or two certainly outweighs the long-term consequences that many are seeing right now after getting COVID.
Yeah, it's just, it's amazing to me how people are either ignoring the truth, or, you know, they're just believing versions of it, what they believe to have been the truth. So I don't know how you combat that. Part of what's happened this week is that they announced that more theaters are going to be opening. In fact, we're going to talk with Broadway in Chicago later about some of their big shows, that theaters finally opening up. But probably the biggest news was that Lollapalooza is going to happen. Normally, it brings about 100,000 people into Grant Park every day for a 4-day weekend. And that is going to happen. No restrictions on the number of people this year. They say they are going to require people to be vaccinated, or you have to have had a negative COVID-19 test within 24 hours of entering the festival on that day. Is that workable? I mean, I don't even know how you do that.
Yeah, the logistics will certainly be difficult. I mean, one, making sure that everyone has their COVID cards is one thing. I still wish that they would have automated it more with the iCares, where all this data is there so that you could have an app, which Chicago still may do and Illinois may do, you know, essentially a vaccine passport on your phone that proves that you were vaccinated. And then the testing is certainly going to be a logistics headache as well for individuals. But they're trying to make it as safe as possible. And interesting that they, you know, rolled out that they're going to have 100,000 people there every day.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what kind. I mean, it's always a bit of a crowd nightmare at the best of times at Lollapalooza and other big events. United Center is announcing shows, you know, things are reopening again, you know, things are getting back to normal. But how do we yeah. do all of this safely? More and more people are traveling right now. I know you've done a little bit of airline travel. What do you recommend if somebody either decides that they just have to go someplace They just want to go on vacation. They just have to, whatever. What do you recommend that people do if they're going to be doing some traveling?
Yeah, if they're fully vaccinated, I feel very comfortable. Those that aren't fully vaccinated or those that are even anxious or a little bit hesitant, you know, I could tell you my activity in the airport is a lot different than it used to be. You know, I wouldn't, I normally would go sit at the gate and, you know, be fine with 15 people around me. Certainly that's not the case anymore. I try to distance myself. Even though I am fully vaccinated, crowds there are just a little bit uncomfortable. Once you're on the plane, you know, it's very good. I mean, the air circulation, we haven't had any transmissions that we know of from airplanes. So I would say it's getting through the airport and then getting out of the airport is the biggest things.
And mask on during the whole flight, right?
100%. Yep. You know, certainly, you know, some airlines are now starting to serve beverages, and, you know, that gives a reason for someone to take their mask off. But, you know, for the most part, everyone's masked up, and the flight attendants are very nice and politically correct in the way that they're asking people. I haven't seen any big commotions, so I've been fortunate, I guess.
Yeah. I'm thinking of investing in a sippy cup. So I can have my mask on and just, you know, stick the straw underneath so I can enjoy a beverage, but keep my mask on the whole time.
I can't believe no one has already done that. I mean, you would think with all the masks that we have and everything right. going on that someone hasn't designed one that is safe and effective and yet allows that to occur.
Yeah, right. Well, somebody get on that right away today, if possible. Let's get to Valerie on the phone line with questions for Dr. Kevin Most, 312-981-7200. Valerie, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Dean. I really enjoy your Sunday show.
Thank you.
And good morning, Doctor. I have a concern about the people who have been vaccinated but still come down with COVID. The New York Yankees, Bill Maher. What should we do to protect ourselves from that?
Yeah, Valerie, you know, the New York Yankees one is one that I'm still trying to figure out. You know, these guys were fully vaccinated, and yet seven individuals out of I don't know how many are in that whole Yankee organization that they took this number from. Now, we do know that the vaccine is not 100% effective, right? No vaccine is. So we know that even the Moderna, you know, 94% effective. Johnson & Johnson, we know, was in the high 80s. So we are going to see some people that still will break through. The goal for the vaccine is to stop the spread of this virus and to protect individuals. So certainly we hope that those breakthroughs are very small. But when they are, it's fine, but we all know about them. It just reinforces that we need to do some things to remain safe.
And what is that, the mask and social distancing still?
Yeah, you know, masking, if you've gotten fully vaccinated, it's kind of one of those where you really have to gonna sit down and do the math in your brain and see what you feel comfortable with. If I was vaccinated, and I am, and I know I have a 95, 96, and matter of fact, now they're looking closer to 97% effective rate, I'm going to feel comfortable being without a mask in a situation that I can control. Situations where I can't control, masking is still probably going to be appropriate. I don't think we're going to get to a point where we aren't going to see masks at all. But if it makes you feel more comfortable to wear the mask, we have to remember that wearing the mask after being vaccinated was to protect others, not to protect us. So it's it'll pan out more as we see in more and more data. But the Yankees is the one that is really kind of a little bit confusing to many of us.
Well, I thank you. I'm calling on behalf of my 92-year-old mother. I'm vaccinated and so is she, but I want to protect her.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. And I would say interacting with other people who are vaccinated is good. So your 92-year-old mother probably has friends in their 90s and 80s. Please allow them to get together if they've all been vaccinated. The mental health portion of it, the social aspect, is so important right now.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Valerie, for the call. We appreciate that. And let's go to Jeff is next. You are a teacher, vaccinated, as I understand it, and have a question for Dr. Most.
Hey, Dean, thank you. And I actually teach with your cousin. And Dr. Most, I appreciate all of your insight. So I was fortunate enough to receive my vaccine very early, February 22nd, I believe. And so I'm just kind of curious as to your thoughts on getting back into the classroom in September or August with a booster. You know, like I just don't know the long-term effects of the vaccination, and just kind of wondering about, you know, what schools look like come August. And, you know, you've already said a few things as far as like masks are going to be like in our future pretty much moving forward. I understand that. So just kind of your thoughts on the booster getting back into school come August and September.
And I think a lot of parents have similar concerns to yours. Jeff, doctor, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. I think the wild card in the schools is all is going to be how many kids get vaccinated. So, you know, right now we're 12 and up. Probably in the next couple months, we'll be able to go like 6 and up to 12. So there's going to be a chance for vaccination, but I think there's going to be a lot of hesitant parents, and you can't blame them. As far as the long-term effects of the vaccine, we've seen the last study that came out showed that 6, 7, we're probably at 9 months now for those initials in the clinical trial that still showed protection. That being said, we've heard both CEOs from the two major pharma companies coming out saying that they're getting ready to produce vaccines. The vaccines that they are looking, the boosters that they're looking at, are going to be mainly for the variants, although we've shown that the vaccine right now works very well against variants. But I do think, I don't know if we'll see a booster this fall, but it would not surprise me if we see a booster sometime next year.
Great. Right. Thank you so much.
Jeff, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Let's get a couple of text questions in. Here's one that says, if you are fully vaccinated and have little chance of spreading the virus to others because the viral load is so low, why the need to continue to test when you're traveling?
Yeah, so two things there. Testing with traveling is one where the countries are actually trying to protect themselves. So although the fully vaccinated portion of it is going to be one, I think you're looking in at countries that are in nowhere near the conditions that we are. You know, we have countries around the world here that have vaccination rates that are in the single digits. So they're still trying to protect their population and to minimize the spread because they don't have the vaccine right now. I hope to see a point where proof of vaccination is going to be enough, because as the listener said, those individuals who have had the vaccine and test positive carry a much lower viral load and appear do not spread the illness as much as we thought they could have.
This is Helen, 312-981-7200. You're on with Dr. Kevin Most.
Hello.
Hi, Helen.
Yes. My question to Dr. Most is, I wasn't tested positive, but it was in my house. My daughter tested positive, as did my husband. But my husband and I were vaccinated in February. Now, the doctor said we're very lucky, nothing real serious, but I lost my taste and smell 2 weeks ago today. Is there anything to change that? Is there medication? What do you see, doctor, as far as longevity with this?
Yeah, Helen, you know, this is the unfortunate wild card that we don't know all the answers to. You certainly probably had COVID. Loss of taste and smell is almost pathognomonic for COVID. And right now there are numerous places, including Northwestern, that are looking at what we call these long hauler symptoms, individuals who have lost their taste and smell, individuals who have brain fog. So they're looking at medications for this. They're looking at other therapies. They're looking at how you can retrain your body, retrain your nose and brain to smell and taste. So certainly we don't have all the answers at this point. But if you look at Northwestern, they do have clinics where they're getting a big group of people with the similar symptoms. Versus if you went to your doctor, he might say, I've had a handful. Well, if we can get thousands, then we can do clinical trials and try to get an answer of how we can eliminate some of these long hauler symptoms.
All right. I do get a loss of taste and smell about every time I get a severe cold. And this has been most of my life. So I know it's not catastrophic. I can live with it. It's not that serious as long as there aren't any more side effects. But I love to eat. I love to cook. I love to smell. And I'm having a hard time with that.
I was going to say, that's got to be so tricky if you're a food lover or preparer. You know, that's part of the enjoyment of the whole thing.
Ex- Exactly. When is enough salt in the potato salad right. enough? You know, you can't taste it.
Exactly.
So, okay. Well, thank you, Doctor. Thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome.
Thank you for the call, Helen. Here's the one that from the 847. Ask Dr. Most if there's a safe way for a large choral group to start singing again. The Chicago Masters singers have not rehearsed together since March of 2020, and we miss it terribly.
Yeah, now if they're all fully vaccinated, you know, you're at least starting to get to that point. The interesting thing about choral groups and singing groups is how much they are, when they sing, you know, the chance of them, it's not like a normal voice, so the chance of them spreading illness or spreading viral particles further is very, is in place. But if the entire group is fully vaccinated, you guys can get together at this point. Again, with 97% protection here, you should be able to do it. If you want to try and do it a little bit more safely, get together, but try to, you know, stay 6 feet apart.
Yeah, distance yourself.
But if you're fully vaccinated, you know, you're good to go.
Yeah. Here's let's get one quick one in here from Linda. Linda, hi, you're on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Oh, hi, Dean. Hi, Dr. Most. Thank you for taking my call. I am planning on getting the vaccine, but I do have a question. I had COVID back in November, and the only way I knew I had it, I had absolutely no symptoms, was I was having a surgery, and they tested me and told me I had it. I know I probably no longer have antibodies to it, but if my body fought it off the first time, even without the antibodies from the first time, wouldn't my body just naturally fight it off again? And I know the vaccine will help me from giving it to somebody else if I do contract it in the future.
Yes.
But I am curious about
that. Is she a superwoman now, Doc?
Yeah. So, Linda, you know, natural immunity, we wish we knew how long it lasted. You talk about the antibodies going away. That was Tom Hanks's wife, you know, the big media exposure. But we have to remember that the body has these things called T cells and B cells, where you may not notice that there's antibodies. You can't measure them, but the body remembers that and can make those. The problem is we don't know how good natural immunity is. For someone like you, getting the vaccine, we know that you're going to have a 10-time response that anybody else would have. So you will be, like Dean said, superwoman. Individuals who have had COVID and get vaccinated, your immune response is so much better. So strongly recommend it. Because we know some people, individuals have gotten COVID twice, and we know the variants are out there. So any protection you can do to yourself would be great.
Always good to talk with Dr. Kevin Most, the medical director at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Hope you have a great Sunday today, Kev. Thanks so much.
Dean, won't it be fun when we can talk about something besides COVID?
Right. I want to talk about allergies. I want to talk about
Exactly.
Coming
in. We are. We will tell all the listeners today we are going to expand beyond COVID here very shortly for other health-related topics. How
right.
about that?
I have a lot of questions about rashes I want to share with you, so we'll get to those in coming weeks.
WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Green alligators and long-necked geese. Some humpty-backed commas and some chimpanzees. Some cats and rats.
Longtime watchers of WGN TV know that this was the theme song for Dr. Lester Fisher's Ark in the Park, the feature that he would do on the Ray Rayner Show, bringing animals from the Lincoln Park Zoo, where he was director for more than 30 years. And as I said, Dr. Fisher just turned 100 years old and is just as with it and just as caring and just as lovable as ever. And we were happy that we were able to sit down with him and remember his amazing career at Lincoln Park Zoo, where he went as a boy.
When I was a little boy, about the time you say when you were a little boy, that my family, it was an outing on a Sunday to come to Lincoln Park Zoo. So I started here probably when I was just a few years old. But to me, the zoo has just been sort of part of my life between those early visits and the fact that medically I spent years here part-time looking after the health of the animals, and then to succeed Marlon Perkins and be the director for 30 years. It definitely is part of me, and coming here today to visit with you is kind of a very positive but nostalgic feeling.
What do you think about when you go through, as you were coming into this building to meet me here today and looking around, you have the perspective of remembering what it was like when you first started here.
I think the important thing is that I'm comfortable that the animals are getting the best possible care in the best possible environment to be in. I look back in the early years, Lincoln Park Zoo was like other 50 to 100 year old public facilities. It was mainly cement, barred cages, and it was a way for people just to come and look in the cage and see the animal, and it was not a comfort thing. And now I think one of the positive things that has no relation to the animal is the fact that it's been called a zoological garden, and the Chicago Park District that own and operate Lincoln Park area and the buildings, to them it was always a challenge to be able to create the garden part. And I look back on the gardens in front of the conservatory next door and always thought we ought to pull those gardens into the zoo, not next to it. And happily, they've done that. Since the Zoo Society took over the management or operation of this place, they've put emphasis on that. So it's kind of a really nice comfort feeling to see the physical plant changed, the animals' home changed, the garden has changed, and it's just a very nice feeling to be able to know that the old zoo is now, relatively speaking, the new zoo.
It must make you feel so proud, does it?
Oh, very much so. And I even look back and remember one time when Mayor Daley his father was here, and I was visiting with them, and I said something. I said, you know, Mr. Mayor, this is one of the few neutral, happy places in Chicago. And he said, Dr. Fisher, why do you say that? And I say, because on a nice Sunday afternoon, we can put 20 to 25,000 people in there and not worry about trouble, about policemen, just people coming to enjoy their zoo.
Wasn't it Ray Kroc from McDonald's that was one of the first guys to give you a huge, huge check to get all that going?
Oh, that was a momentous occasion for me. Someone set up this lunch with Joan and Ray Kroc, and in the course of it, he kept reminding me that a restaurant is only as good as its kitchen. And the fact that we had no so-called facilities specifically to handle the food and do stuff. And so we had a nice lunch and a nice visit. And at the end of it, Ray said, I'm going to support you. And he sat down and wrote me $1 million check. And to me, that was just something unbelievably nice. And I thanked him, of course. I could have walked on water that day. And after that, we had a good relationship personally because Ray happens to be a Bohemian. He's from Czecho, the old country. And my parents also came from Czechoslovakia. So we started a dialogue. And when they left Chicago and moved out to the West Coast, I alerted the zoo people out there and said, here's someone you want to look into and after. And they also worked with Ray out there, and I think the Los Angeles Zoo got a nice gift equally.
Yeah. Have there been like really memorable moments for you here? I'm sure there's a million, great things that you can think of, but are there one or two things that happened here, one or two changes that you made, one or two visits by famous people, maybe one or two incidents that happened?
Well, one thing that's current, and that is that Prince Philip, the person in England who is the husband of the Queen, he came here on a wildlife tour of various places in the country, and I think Hope McCormick was the lady who sort of underwrote a special lunch for the prince, and so he came to visit. And in addition, at that time, one of our male gorillas had come from England as part of a breeding loan, and Kisoro was the name of the animal, I believe, and that was kind of special for me. I never thought I'd get to see His Royal Highness, but we stood there and looked at Kisoro and enjoyed the visit.
You were longtime friends, I imagine you are still longtime friends with Betty White, who's a longtime supporter and friend, right?
Betty and I go way, way back, I don't know how far, 30, 40 years maybe. And I met her when I was brought on the board of the Morris Animal Foundation out in Denver. That's a group that are concerned about animal health and medical issues. And so Betty and I at all the board meetings would get together. And one time, there's a classic story, which is a true one. Betty came to my apartment here in Chicago for dinner one time during a visit. And at the end of the nice dinner and friendly chatter, she got up and said, "I think it's time I leave." And I said, "Oh, you have to come with me." And she said, "Where?" And I said, "To the bedroom." And she looked at me and in classic Betty White way, she said, "That's the best offer I've had today." And so we went to my bedroom, and my wife had been collecting Raggedy Ann dolls. And I said to Betty, "She'd like you to have one." And so Betty said, "You really mean that?" And I said, "Of course Wendy would be happy." And so she picked out a Raggedy and sat down and cried and said, "I haven't had this since I was a little girl."
It's one of my favorite stories from Dr. Lester Fisher, longtime friends with Betty White, but typical Betty White, "That's the best offer I've had all day," to something like that.
Dean Richards, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out.
We have welcomed back so much entertainment this week, at least announcements of things that are coming back after being down for the last 14 months because of the pandemic. Word of concerts and Lollapalooza. And as we revealed to you on our WGN TV news this week, Broadway in Chicago is back. And our longtime pal, Eileen Licario, is also back with us on the line as well. Eileen, do you even remember me after this whole time?
I do. And actually, listening to that song, though not a musical, had me really choked up, truthfully, because it's pretty hard to believe we've been gone for so long.
I cannot believe. Just the whole pandemic, the vastness of it, the sadness of it, the seriousness of it, and so many people who were out of work, shut down, our entertainment community completely shut down.
Unimaginable.
Unimaginable, exactly.
Yeah. It's just, as I often said during the pandemic, and theater doesn't take out well. So, we are heartbroken for all the people who lost their lives, and we are devastated by all our partners in Chicago, tourism, hotels, restaurants, everything to do with the Central Business District of Chicago that sort of lost all their business during this time period.
Yeah, it's just been absolutely devastating. And the fact that theater, you know, music, theater, name the entertainment venue, it was closed, and all of the people, both in front of the stage and behind the stage, have been out of work for the last 14 months. But that's about to change.
Well, <Yeah. laughs>
I cannot tell you how happy I was when I got the word that Broadway in Chicago was announcing dates and shows were coming back. I can't even imagine what it must have been like in your office with your staff.
We're not in our office, which is one of the
really?
Weird things.
Oh, really? So you're all still working at home?
We're all working remotely and probably will be until the beginning of the summer, although this weekend felt like the beginning of the summer. But we're very, very hard at work. There's a very small group of us that is returning little by little over this time period. And I never thought that announcing and reopening our theater would be as hard as it was in the last couple of weeks, because it's like learning all over again and doing things that we had been so used to doing but are just a little rusty.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I mean, you know, for a lot of people who are just going back into their offices, it's weird to be, back with amongst people. You know, on Friday on the WGN TV morning news, we're all sitting at the main anchor desk again, all of us together instead of being spread out. And we sat there like I said, I feel very naughty sitting so close to all of you. This feels really weird to be so close. So there's going to be an adjustment of getting things back to the new normal, I guess we should call it.
I think so. But I have a feeling people, judging by, I live in the loop as well. So judging by what has happened over the weekend, I mean, people are really ready to get back out. And, you know, there's a high propensity of people who have been vaccinated. And I think our theater community is probably the highest of all of them because they want to get back into a theater, sitting next. I mean, that's part of the joy of theater is being able, it's a communal experience.
Right.
It's not a lonely experience, like even watching a movie in your living room. It's all about the reaction of the people sitting next to you and coming out with a story that you never expected to come out to understand or know or love.
Well, I'm so curious of how this is going to work when the big theaters, your theaters, all reopen. But before we get to that, I want to talk about coming out of the gate, talking about reopening with a pre-Broadway premiere.
We like to do things big.
That is huge. A show that's going to come to Chicago before it goes to New York.
Yeah, we like to do things big, and we're so lucky that Garth Drabinsky chose Chicago and is willing to take the risk of being, pretty much the first one out of the gate. The story itself is so important to be told. It's a period of history that I think will be just a wonderful way to start out the theater season.
Yeah, the show is it's a musical that's called Paradise Square. And it will be among the first shows to be coming back, but certainly it will be the first pre-Broadway premiere to come back to the theater district downtown at the Niederlander Theater, formerly the Oriental. It's going to be November 2nd through December the 5th. What can you tell us about Paradise Square?
Well, Paradise Square is really it had a little bit of a tryout in Berkeley. In California, at the Berkeley Rep. And it is a wonderful, wonderful story that is about the Five Points neighborhood in New York, which was a neighborhood during the beginning of the Civil War where Irish immigrants and African Americans lived together in harmony. And their music and their dance and their culture sort of melded together during that time period. And many say that that is where the genesis of
American Tap came from. Mm. And so then, of course, came Lincoln made possibly a mistake in saying that African Americans couldn't be drafted, and so that hence came the draft riots, and on some level it probably is the basis of the tension, the racial tensions that came up during that time period. But the story itself is about love and acceptance and this amazing you know, amalgamation of dance and music.
I cannot wait. I have said throughout these 14 months, I am looking forward to being at some opening night someplace where it's the first show back after the pandemic to feel what kind of electricity is going to happen in all of those opening night rooms, wherever they are. I cannot even imagine what it's going to be
The only thing that's really important, Dean, is that for several months, every night is going to be opening night for most people in the audience. Mm. So that's the exciting part of bringing back theater, is that even though it may be the very first night, and for me or for you, it may be awesome, but for most people, you know, whatever night they choose as their first night to go back into the theater, they're going to have that experience.
Yeah, very true. Just to be amongst people, to feel the applause of an audience, to feel the reaction of the performers, the reaction of the musicians in the pit. You're right. It's going to be electric every single performance. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I've always said my favorite part of, you know, people ask me what is my favorite part of my job at Broadway in Chicago, and I've always said it's the audience. The audience is so special. It's what makes theater what it is, yeah. And it's those experiences that I'm really looking forward to.
So now, how will this work as the theaters reopen and people are coming back in? Will there be limited capacities? Will there be what's your plan right now?
Well, we're going to be at 100% capacity, assuming that all the regulations and the CDC and the state and city governments are all aligned. We're not opening till October 5th, so we've got a ways to go. We're assuming that everything will go along just fine over the summer, and that the new vaccinated world will provide us the ability to be back at 100%. We anticipate right now, we're asking people in advance to prepare for wearing masks throughout the performance from the time they enter the building to the time they leave. However, we fully understand that that may change as the guidelines change from the CDC, state, and city governments.
Okay, so Paradise Square is the pre-Broadway show, but there's a whole lineup of other shows at the Broadway in Chicago houses downtown. Let me take a break, and we'll come right back with Eileen Licario, vice president of Broadway in Chicago, right on WGN. Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN and our Week in Theater segment. Soon to be reporting on actual theater again after 14 months of telling you about virtual performances and theater history and all kinds of things that we've pulled out of our hat to try to fill the theater space here. We're so happy to tell you about shows that are coming back, and that includes Frozen. That's part of the Broadway in Chicago schedule. Eileen Licario, Vice President, Broadway in Chicago, is on the line with us. You've got to be excited about these big shows that are coming to Chicago, finally.
I mean, in addition to Paradise Square, the pre-Broadway premiere, we've been able to hold on to shows that were scheduled as much as a year ago, and been able to put them into slots that we thought would be able to be open for. So we've got We start out on October 5th with six. We have Alton Brown Live following up. Then we have Frozen and Simon and Garfunkel Story, Come From Away, Moulin Rouge, My Fair Lady, Devil Wears Prada, another pre-Broadway, and Jesus Christ Superstar. Those were all already scheduled. Then in August, we actually launch a subscription for the first time in about a year and a half. Mm. And that subscription will have six new shows that will obviously play off in 2022. And in June of this year, you'll be getting an announcement about some of the additional shows that will finish out the 2021 year.
Wow. It's just so exciting to hear about shows that are going to be coming here again.
Live shows,
live,
not on tape.
Actual shows that you don't have to watch on your computer screen, right?
That's exactly right.
You know, and that you have Disney's Frozen coming into the Cadillac Palace Theater November 19th through January 23rd. That's the perfect holiday show for people.
Yeah, it is a perfect holiday show. It's a great show for families to get together again and see. And you have to know that Broadway in Chicago has been hard at work at really preparing the theaters for this return. So, you know, our HVA system has been overhauled so that that's going to be in great shape, and we are doing a lot of touchless work. So, for instance, all our bathrooms are touchless now, and we'll be doing digital ticketing so that we're lessening the touch points in every area we possibly can.
Right. You'll just probably scan something on your phone where you used to hand a ticket.
We're all going to be healthier for this.
Yeah.
We're all going to be healthier overall for this. I mean, if you notice, not many of us had the common flu during the year because we were taken care of. So, all those things will be in place at the theaters, no matter what, there have been improvements. So that's been great.
Yeah. I just think it's great. And I think it's great. You know, some of these shows that we've heard about, you know, some, we've been able to see in New York before everything shut down on Broadway. But, you know, we knew eventually would come to Chicago. And I think we're on the schedule to come before everything shut down. Like Moulin Rouge, for example,
yep.
And The Devil Wears Prada, and you know, things like that. That finally, you know, if things go, let's keep our fingers crossed that everything's going to go well, and that all of these things will be opening on time. We're looking forward to that.
Well, I can't tell you how many plans Broadway in Chicago made over and over again to be coming back, but this one is going to stick. We're sure of it.
Yeah.
We feel really good about it. And, you know, like Moulin Rouge will be the first to, Chicago will be the first to see it outside of Broadway. So, you know, that comes in February. And they were able to move their dates so that it would be in a way that people would really be able to see the show, which is great. And, you know, the pre-Broadway hung on to Chicago with The Devil Wears Prada. So that's great. So we have two, the richness of having two pre-Broadways on our schedule right now, which is Paradise Square and The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, very, very exciting. Last week here on the show, we had our mutual friend Miguel Cervantes on the show.
Oh.
I was doing an interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda about his movie version of In the Heights that's going to be coming out early June. And that was the day that they announced that Broadway would be reopening and that Hamilton, in particular on Broadway, would be opening. I think it's September 4th or 14th. I can't remember. But I asked Lynn, you know, I know Miguel, who starred as Alexander Hamilton here in Chicago for 5 years.
And we're so happy that he's going to be back.
He's going to be back. I mean, he was all set after Hamilton closed here. He got the Plum assignment. He's going to star on Broadway, the biggest show on Broadway, and then everything shut down after everything happened. So I asked Lynn.
I mean, I think he did like three performances, and then he knew he wasn't coming back. And the great thing about Miguel is he still considers Chicago, you know, his home, and he's done so much for all of us. He's helped us through the pandemic.
Right.
And it's those actors that have really, you know, they've been so generous of their time Adam from our original Star of Aladdin came back, and he actually entertained on a fire truck the nurses and doctors. And, you know, these are the things that made my heart break over the time period, is knowing those people had no work, no job. And no warning.
So, how can people buy tickets for all of the things that we've just talked about? The pre-Broadway premiere of Paradise Square, which is going to be. Do you have the dates right there, Eileen?
Yeah, for Paradise Square, the dates are November.
I found it. November
2nd through December 5th.
So,
and what's really important is BroadwayInChicago.com is your friend. It's all updated. It has all the information you could ever want about the new dates. And you know what? We've all gotten really very savvy at online purchases. And so that's the best way to go.
Right.
Purchase online, BroadwayInChicago.com.
There you go. To purchase, to get information, to check dates for all the shows that we talked about, BroadwayInChicago.com.
There's a fabulous video on Paradise Square, because it's not, you know, if you don't know what it's about, it really tells the story. So you can get a little background, so you know what you're buying tickets for.
I could not tell you how happy I am that all of this is happening. It will only be eclipsed by the first time I see you in a lobby.
That's right.
Me
too.
Like we always do when we come to openings. Eileen Licario, Vice President, Broadway in Chicago. My friend, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll talk
to you. Thank you. Joyous morning. Thank you.
Giallo di siga fra le dita, io con la siga camminando. Scusami ma ci credo tanto, che posso fare questo salto. E anche se la strada è in salita, per quest'ora mi sto allenando. E buonasera, signore e signori, cool, fuori gli attori, vi conviene. We say we don't play enough Italian music on this show. Stare zitti e buoni, qui la gente strana. This song is called Zitti e Buoni. Zitti e Buoni. And it is the Eurovision winning song for 2021. Do you know about Eurovision? Do you know what this is? It's a worldwide music competition. It is, while it's not that big in the United States, it is one of the biggest entertainment events in the world. Every year, countries from all over the world compete in Eurovision. And, you know, they have competitions within their own countries, and then whoever wins those moves on to Eurovision. And yesterday they announced the big winner of this year's event. The group is called Måneskin, and the song Zitti e Buoni. What do you think, Shwani? Easy to dance to?
Yeah, it is easy to dance to. It's got a good beat.
You know the most famous winner of Eurovision? Little group called ABBA.
Ah,
that's
okay.
How ABBA was discovered.
So Eurovision goes back that far then?
Eurovision, you know, I'm just full of interesting facts today. Eurovision goes back to 1956.
Really?
Switzerland won the first Eurovision competition with the song Refrain by Lies Isesi. I just like to do my Swiss chef impersonation. But ABBA won sometime in the mid-70s. ABBA won 1974, to be exact, for their song Waterloo.
Okay.
Remember that song?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yep. Played that during my DJ days.
That's
in
right.
College.
Hey, Dave Schwann laying down the ABBA for you, man. Here comes Waterloo.
Waterloo, yeah. And Dancing Queen, of course.
Yeah, man.
Fernando.
Yep. That's how ABBA got discovered, through Eurovision. But every year, countries all over the world participate in this, and it's a huge deal. I happen to have been in Greece one year when the Eurovision competition was going on. You would have thought it was the World Series, Super Bowl, and Academy Awards all rolled into one. That's how much it dominated the news, everything that was going on. Eurovision is enormous everywhere.
That just seems so cool because it's a competition. You know, we have so many you know, we have Lollapalooza here and things like that, but never a competition like that, like a countrywide battle of the bands.
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, it's got to be just your, I guess, European countries, right? It's called Eurovision. So maybe that's why the U.S. doesn't get involved. Maybe we're not allowed because we're not in Europe, but it's a big deal.
The World Series is always only just held in the United States.
That's very true. That's true. Come on, let us in your little Eurovision contest.
And then call it World Vision or something like that.
Yeah.
International Vision.
See, right away, Schwandy wants to rename the whole thing. You Americans. You Americans just think you can do anything you want. Anyway, congratulations to the group. What did I say? Maneskin.
Ziti y bueno. Ziti and good.
Congratulations. All right. So we're going to the Indy 500 qualifications today at 12 noon. So we've got a shorter show, which means that we had to split up our interview with Dr. Lester Fisher from the Lincoln Park Zoo into two different segments. It wouldn't be a conversation about Dr. Lester Fisher without...
Green alligators and long-necked geese.
I'm telling you, people of a certain age, right, Schwani? You hear this music and you think of Dr. Lester Fisher's Ark in the Park on the legendary Ray Rayner and his friends morning show on WGN. Dr. Fisher appeared for decades with Ray Rayner, who was afraid of animals, as we learn in this interview.
That's amazing that you mentioned that last week, because he just looked like he was having such a good time with Chelveston and all the other animals.
Yeah, big faker. Big faker. We had a fantastic conversation with Dr. Fisher. He just turned 100 years old, which is amazing. And he lives in Hayward, Wisconsin now. His daughter and son-in-law drove him down to Chicago to go to the zoo. They were looking at some new things that are happening at the zoo. And I met up with them there, and we sat down in the ape house, which is fantastic. You know, we're talking, and these apes are running around their areas. So interesting. And just took me back to being a kid again when I would watch Dr. Lester Fisher on WGN showing the animals on the different programs. And that is one of the things that we talked about with Dr. Lester Fisher.
Very lucky break for me, because my predecessor, Marlon Perkins, was Mr. Television here in Chicago in the early years, in the late 40s. And they were looking for someone to bring some animals just to fill time on television, and Marlon brought some animals down. Unfortunately, toward the end of his time here in Chicago, he was spending as much or more time on television work than he was perhaps in zoo work, direct management, and so on. And so when I became director and people started asking me, well, are you going to be on TV? And I said, no, thank you. I don't think I really should get into that. And happily, WGN was very persistent. And finally, I said to them, if you go down and get permission from my superintendent and the commissioners, I'll be glad to give it a go. And they did, and I did. And I started doing a little local TV stuff, I think, on Saturday morning. And finally, Ray Rayner got in touch with me and said, would you be willing to spend some time on my show? And I said, of course, Ray. And so twice a week for about 8 minutes or 9 minutes, I would bring animals to your studio. And Ray just remains one of the most spectacular people, in my opinion, that there is. Many, many people to this day think if they do a 30-minute TV show once a week that that's important. And Ray ended up doing 1 hour, if I remember, 5 days a week, in addition to some theater. And so to me, that was one of the great relationships to be with Ray Rayner. And again, he genuinely was scared of animals when we first started. And at times, literally, I couldn't hand him the leash of my collie dog because he wasn't comfortable. But I think that that's what helped put Lincoln Park Zoo on the map here in Chicago. I guess that was told at that time that more people watched the Ray Rayner show than other so-called stations combined. And so that was my great break. And many, many years I enjoyed with Ray. And finally, he even started bringing your technical people here to the zoo, in addition to my carrying case little small animals to your studio. So that's how all that happened, Dean.
Were you able to, you know, go out to restaurants, to stores? People must have stopped and recognized you all the time back then.
Unfortunately, it was embarrassing, yes. I became, I guess, a TV celebrity in town because of my time with Ray, not because I was Les Fisher Zoo Director, and I always understood that. And the fact that he in turn got over his phobia about wondering how close he should be to an animal, that was very satisfying to me. And he enjoyed it, of course, coming here. It was a break for your crew. They had a good time, and we would tape anywhere from 4 to 6 or 7 shows in the course of one working day.
And very much the way that you changed the way people viewed zoos and the way zoos operated, I think also you were one of the first on television to do this. Now there's not a talk show around that doesn't bring some animal expert in.
I felt good about that because it was an opportunity again for the education. And I felt so strongly about the fact that the zoo should be part of whatever curriculum there is going on. And it was a nice thing to do. So I feel good, yes, in the education area. I always wanted to bring some animals to the children in the hospitals in Chicago. And the physicians would not hear of it. The ones that were connected to the hospital would say they might be bitten, they might be scratched, they might bring some bugs. And one of the local hospitals, La Rabida, on the south side here in Chicago, agreed to let me try it. And happily, I not only brought animals there, but after the first few visits, the doctors and nurses were waiting for me, and they would take the carrying case and the animals. And after that, we were welcome to any other hospital in Chicago. So that was a nice thing that I was able to feel good about.
Yeah. You have just turned 100 years old. Everyone's asking you to what you attribute your longevity. But I'm just wondering how you feel about turning 100 years old.
It's kind of hard to explain the feeling because it's not even real. It just is something that's happened. I've been fortunate in the sense that here in this very building that we're doing this, I had my 99th birthday, and I did that thinking that I may never make it to 100. And here I am chatting with you very happily. And I'm over 100 years old, but by sheer good luck, I have trouble with eyes and with legs and other things. But at the same time, I still am healthy, relatively speaking. And so I think I'm just a lucky guy. Yeah. A lot of good genes and a lot of good care, a lot of good support people, great medical people that I've lived with and worked with. And I think... beyond that, all I can say is I hope that I'm around for a little longer.
Yeah, we sure hope that, too. A 100-year-old Dr. Lester Fisher, Director Emeritus, the Lincoln Park Zoo. He was the director himself from 1962 to 1992 for 30 years and really transformed the zoo and is such a part of the Chicago landscape, not only for all he did for the Lincoln Park Zoo, but part of the Chicago television scene for decades, part of WGN-TV with his own show for a little while, and then on a regular on the Ray Rayner and his friend's morning show regular on the Bozo Show, bringing animals in. Just one of the nicest guys. Very, very gentle and very lovely and charismatic. I mean, people have been texting in memories of Dr. Lester Fisher this morning. Somebody sent a text. The 630 area code said, I have a wonderful Dr. Fisher story. When my wife was dying from cancer, we took her to the zoo. She had always wanted to see a baby orangutan. Dr. Fisher arranged for that to happen. She died several months after, but it was one of the happiest occasions that she and I experienced together. I will always appreciate him. Not one bit surprised to hear that. Dr. Fisher was just, you know, that much of a wonderful, wonderful, you know, man. 630 area code here saying, Dean, enjoying the interview with Dr. Fisher. My husband had the opportunity to work with Dr. Fisher at the Berwyn Animal Clinic. Dr. Fisher got him a scholarship to U of I. My husband was always thankful for getting his start with animals because of Dr. Fisher. So, I mean, there's story after story after story like that. If you want to hear the whole interview, if you want to see the story that I did on television on Dr. Fisher, you'll get to see some footage from the old Ark in the Park segments, some old photographs, some classic vintage photographs. If you go to WGNTV.com/Dean's List, WGNTV.com/Dean's List, you can take a look at the whole thing. So because of the Indy 500 qualifying at noon, we'll be off early today, our regularly scheduled food time show. We're going to squeeze into this next half hour so we can continue what we've been doing over the past several years, getting you ready for grilling season. We've been over the past few weeks talking about grilling burgers. We did a fantastic segment on my TV cooking segment this past Wednesday on pizzas on the grill. One of the easiest, most delicious, most wonderful things to do on the grill. I'll tell you what I cooked and talk about the recipes in a couple of minutes. We've been talking about side dishes like corn on the cob, which has been one of my favorite things to do on the grill. And I wanted to bring in a real expert today for some of the heavy lifting. Dustin Green is the Weber Grill's barbecue experience manager and also the culinary grill master for Weber Grills. Dustin, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Dean. Glad to be here.
I'm one of these people that has been outside even in while it's raining, even when it's cold outside, no matter what it's doing outside. I just cannot get enough of being on the grill out there. And, you know, with the holiday weekend coming up, I think a lot of people are going to be, you know, stoking up their grills as well. I was hoping when, you know, before we found out about our preemption today, that we're going to have a little time to talk about grilling, you know, just the physical grill itself. But I want to make sure that we don't run out of time to talk about some recipes that can be a little challenging for people, like doing a full slab of ribs on the grill. What do you recommend for the average person at home? Do you need special equipment? Do you need special things to do that?
You know, Dean, you really don't. You know, if you have your grill, it's really about putting, you know, setting your temperature that you're going to cook at. And then, you know, depending on the size of your ribs, it's really about the time, you know. We like to cook ribs by feel, but, you know, to kind of for all-inclusive sakes, depending on the weight of your ribs, it really is, you know, it's about that timing. And if for, say, a slab of ribs that it's like 3 pounds and up, you know, we're looking at what we call a 3-2-1 method. You know, super easy. You put them, you set your grill for, you know, 250 degrees, 3 hours that you're going to have the ribs on the grill smoking. 2 hours, you put them into a wrap with a little bit of apple juice. And then you put them back on the grill for 1 hour after that when you take them out of that wrap. So it's a pretty simple method to get people from point A to point B, you know, with, you know, hopefully not a lot of confusion or, you know, opportunity.
Okay, so walk me through this again one time now here. Let's say I've got, let's think about this in terms of, you know, the classic kettle grill. You're going to be doing this in an indirect method, I assume, right? In other words, the charcoal or the briquettes on the sides of the grill, not completely underneath. You don't want direct flame underneath the actual ribs, right?
100% correct. And you know, once if you're looking for that 250 degree temperature on a kettle, then you also have to adjust your dampers, you know, which is the vents on the top and the bottom. Typically, I start with just the top vents, you know, for adjusting that temperature. But if you have to go to the bottom one, you can do that as well. You know, and you mentioned it. You know, for me, I like to put my charcoal to one side. You know, you can do it on the other side and put your ribs down the middle. But if you just go to one side, you have your ribs offset that. With a little bit of a, with a little bit of a drip pan underneath. And what that does is it just helps collect anything that might fall off the ribs. Keeps your grill a little bit cleaner. And, you know, it just helps with the overall cook.
Okay.
But yeah, once you're locked in with your 250 at your indirect, like you said, it's like I said, it's really about that timing and getting the ribs on and, you know, just letting them cook.
Okay. So same thing then for a gas grill where you'd just have burners, maybe a burner or just on one side of the grill. So the heat inside of the grill itself is kind of circulating around the ribs that are on the grill, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, that convection heat, depending on what you're grill on, really promotes that cooking. It promotes the caramelization on the ribs, which ultimately equates to flavor. And that's what we're looking for is, you know, you put them on, you add, you know, your wood or if you're going to use any type of, you know, smoking chips or anything to help with your flavor. And, you know, that convection heat just roasts them slow and just helps impart.
Okay, so am I putting these flat down on the grill? Because, you know, when you go to the store, you see all these accessories, these racks and, you know, things that, you know, you're tempted to buy. Do I need any of that stuff?
They do help. And you know, you mentioned it. We sell, you know, rib racks that'll help the ribs stand up on their side. And what that does is it allows that smoke and with that convection heat that's flowing through your grill, it allows you to really hit the ribs on all sides as it's coming up, the heat's coming up through the grates. Hits kind of a circular motion through the grill, hits your ribs on all sides before it kind of runs out the back, you know, for the airflow, you know, past the airflow.
Okay. All right. So now you mentioned this 3-2-1 method then. So I'm doing the grill, the ribs just straight on the grill first, right?
Correct. For 3 hours.
Okay. Low and slow, 3 hours. And then am I wrapping it in foil and putting them back on the grill for 2 hours?
Correct, 2 hours. And what I find is about a quarter cup, between a quarter and a half cup of apple juice will work. And what that does is it helps create, you know, we're not going to get a, say, totally fall off the bone rib, but it helps with the tenderization and the nice pullback that you're looking for on your bones with that meat.
Okay, I like a little fight with my ribs anyway. I don't want them to give up too easily off the bone anyway. So that works for me. And then after the 2 hours wrapped in the foil, then I take them out of the foil and put them back on the grill like I had them in the first place for one more hour.
Correct. And then you'll cook them for within that hour. I'll usually leave them unwrapped for about 30 minutes or so, just till kind of that bark on the outside, it's going to dry out. You're going to see that it's nice and, you know, an even crispness to it. And then I'm going to hit them with the sauce. You definitely don't want to hit them with the sauce too early, because what happens is that the sugar in the sauce then has an opportunity to go a little bit farther than you want it. So you kind of put that in towards the last, say, 15, 30 minutes of your cook then, of that last hour that we talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, I wait until I'm just about ready to take them off before I put any kind of barbecue sauce, whether it's ribs or chicken or whatever it is that I'm, pork, whatever I happen to be barbecuing. I put it on right at the end so I can control how much of that sugar burn that I want to get on the ribs themselves. When it's done, do you let it sit for a while or can you serve it right away?
When I take them off, I like to let them sit for a couple minutes. What happens is you let that heat kind of dissipate from the bones. They're not as hot. And then I'll cut them up and serve them. And it just kind of takes away that part of anybody, maybe, you know, when you're picking them up to eat them, of burning themselves. But it's also good for the meat because the juices will kind of redistribute. It helps a little bit with the tenderization. But you don't want to eat them extremely hot anyways. You want to let it come down a little bit in temperature, and then they're not steaming. Because what happens with that steaming when you take food off is you're ultimately losing moisture in the food, and it's going to be a little bit dry.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, I want to try to get as many questions as I can from our listeners for you. Grilling questions. We've got one of the country's experts here with us today. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200.
Chicago's very own WGN.
Dustin Green is with us today. Culinary grill master, Weber Grills, also the manager of the Weber Barbecue Experience. Do you like to do pizzas on the grill, Dustin?
Dean, I love to do pizzas. It's one of my favorite things. You know, the possibilities that you're able to do, I'm able to get my kids involved so that they can pick the toppings they want. And, you know, you just make it a whole family affair.
Yeah, there's a bunch of recipes online at Weber.com. I did some on my television cooking segment this week. I did a classic margarita pizza because that's, to me, that's the quintessential, you know, a thin crust margarita pizza with tomato and mozzarella cheese and freshly cut basil. I did a barbecued chicken caramelized onion pizza. That might be my favorite pizza of all time. It's so delicious. And I did a shrimp scampi pizza with like garlic shrimp and some herbs and things that, you know, went on the pizza crust with the marinara sauce and, you know, mozzarella cheese, Parmesan cheese. That was amazingly delicious, you know, and something a little bit different. Do you have a favorite pizza somebody could try?
You know, for us, and you mentioned some great ones there. It's like right around lunchtime. I'm sitting here like drilling myself. I'm hungry. You know, one of the ones that I like to do is like a prosciutto and asparagus.
Nice.
You know, and I'll do it with like a white sauce with an Alfredo sauce as a base. And then just put some great grilled asparagus on there, cut it up into some bite-sized pieces. Nice layer of prosciutto and then top it with cheese. And it's amazing. It's great. Oh,
that sounds so delicious. Some questions on our text line, 312-981-7200. Somebody texts saying, I put my ribs in a crock pot with a can of beer on low for 6 hours and then take them out. Last 30 minutes, it goes on the grill. How do you feel about that, Dustin?
You know, as long as people are cooking, they can do whatever they'd like, you know, and if they're putting them on a grill, it's even better.
Okay. Right. 847 code says, where do you put the apple juice with your procedures that you gave us for the grill, the ribs a few minutes ago? Where does the apple juice go? Do you put it in the aluminum pouch?
I do. Like, you create a pocket. So when you lay your foil flat on the table, I'll put the ribs meat side down on the foil, and then I'll pour that quarter cup onto the ribs where it's almost hitting the back of the bones. And then the way you fold them up is it creates that pocket so that you're able to hold that juice inside them.
Yeah. Yeah. Heavy duty foil. So it doesn't pop out, you know, you get a little cut in it, and the way you fold it to create, you know, a seal. So it holds, that's the key here. 847 area code. When do you put rub on the ribs? We didn't really talk about seasoning the ribs before we went through all those procedures. What do you recommend?
You know, for me, I'll rub them probably, you know, a couple hours before I put them on the grill, but we like to hit them with a little bit of like a salad mustard. And all that does is it works as a glue to hold your seasoning to the rib. It doesn't impart any flavor. And then I'll put them back in the refrigerator. Cause ultimately when you're smoking, you want your food as cold and as moist as you can keep it for a longer time, because smoke likes those attributes for food. So I'll season them ahead of time, put them back in the fridge, get them back down to as cold as I can get them, and then we'll start our cooking process.
So you said to rub them down first with a salad mustard. Do you mean like a yellow mustard?
That's it, just a regular yellow mustard.
Wow.
You don't need a ton. You could use about a teaspoon per side. It's just enough to kind of create like a layer, like a glue, ultimately, that your rub's going to stick to.
Okay. And then what kind of rub are you doing on there?
For me, I like a little bit of the sweeter rubs. You know, I like more of a Kansas City style that's going to have a little bit more sugar in it. It doesn't have a high, like, pepper, like, spiciness to it. My kids don't really like to go down that road. So what I try to do is, like I said, I stick with the sweeter types, and they work for us.
Okay, yeah, so it's whatever your taste for the premixed rubs, but if you just wanted to create something at home, what would it be? Salt, pepper, what else would go in there? A little cayenne, I would think, right?
Yeah, but, you know, for me, it's sugar, pretty much sugar-based. I use paprika, salt, a little bit of onion powder, some garlic. You know, it doesn't need as much salt as you think. You know, it just needs a little bit. But it's actually a majority. It's probably half a majority. It's sugar.
Yeah, interesting. So that's not burning up. That sugar is the rub, is not caramelizing and burning up on the grill?
It's not. And you know what happens with that process is it's low enough to where it's not going to push it past that point. And then with that apple juice, it helps keep it to where it's not going to go that far either.
Got it. Okay. 708 area code says, I don't eat pork. What's the best way to cook beef ribs on the grill?
I love beef ribs. You know, the process, it's similar. But, for a beef rib, if you're going to get them, typically we like to recommend it. At least for me, I like the plate beef ribs. There's really two type of beef ribs. There's plate and there's chuck. And the chuck ones seem to be a little bit fattier. So they're a three-bone rack. I'll smoke them. It'll be about 4 to 6 hours to where the bark is going to set, meaning like when I go to touch the rib, the seasoning that we put on the outside, it doesn't rub. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come off of our meat.
Yep.
And then I'll wrap those in, the Texas crutch, or I'll put them in foil. But you don't need to put any liquid with the beef rib. You just wrap them. You put them back on the grill. It'll be about another hour or two longer until we say probe tender. Typically with a beef rib, that's going to be in about the 202 to say 206, 207 for a temperature range.
Okay.
And then I'll rest them for a little bit of time.
I just like the beef ribs because it makes me feel like Fred Flintstone eating that gigantic rack, right?
Oh, they're awesome. They're so good.
815 area code said, talking about pizza, how do you do crusts, the pizza crust on the grill? Now, I've done several ways, from like a homemade dough, a dough that I make, a dough that I buy at the store and stretch out, or those pre-made crusts that are like, you know, boboli or whatever they're called, that are just pre-made. Mm-hmm. And really, I'm, you know, for the easiest way possible, that's the way to do it. I put them on the grill on one side to toast one side of it, flip them over, and then I put the toppings on the side that I just toasted and, you know, let it cook again, either straight on the grill or on a pizza stone. I've done it both ways. How about you?
You know, we're the same. You know, it just depends. You know, we've done the store-bought doughs. We've made our own dough. You know, if you're going to, you stretch them and then you can grill them on the one side, like you said, or you can preheat. You know, we sell these beautiful grilling stones. We also sell the pizza stone. And you, as long as you got the semolina on those, you know, if you're not going to grill them on one side first, you put the little bit of that semolina so it doesn't stick, and you just slide it on, and then you just let the convection heat of the grill cook. So it's a personal preference at that point.
Yeah.
But I love the grilled ones because it adds that extra layer of flavor to it.
I do, too. That's one of the reasons that I like it, for exactly that reason. Weber.com's got recipes for it. And from my segment that I did on TV this week, we've got all the recipes also at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks if you want to get something on that. We were talking about this in the office before the show today. You know, some people who can't eat gluten are using these cauliflower crusts, or, you know, people trying to keep their carbs down. Is that easily done on the grill?
It is, but with those crusts, they're a little bit more delicate. So you got to be careful when you're handling them. And you might not be able to flip it on the grill first to get a grilled side of it. It might just be one of those that you top it and put it onto the stone and let it really just hit that baking with the convection heat.
Because it's basically held together with cheese and eggs, right? It's cauliflower,
correct,
cheese, and eggs, essentially.
Correct.
So
yep.
It's more easily will fall apart than a traditional one. Dustin, we have to do this again sometime when we don't have a preemption and we can spend a lot of time and answer all the questions. But the best way to get information about all things Weber, Weber.com, recipes, the grills themselves, accessories, etc. Is that right, Weber.com?
Weber.com is perfect. We have all kinds of great stuff on there, from looking at our grills to cleaning advice, maintenance, recipes. You know, it's all there.
Thanks, Dustin. Have a great Sunday.